And I got out. I come running back to you. I come running back to you. Yeah, I come running back to you.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia's people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 106. It's July the 18th, 2023. And today's guest is a former businessman, an activist, and a good friend, David Stanley. Welcome, David.
I'm glad to be here.
David, you grew up in East Beckley. Tell me a little bit about your early life.
Okay. We moved to Beckley from eastern Kentucky. My father had tuberculosis, and there was a tuberculosis sanitarium here in Beckley. And we moved up here. I was 7 years old at the time. We had a family of, let me think about this a minute. In the little house over there at the end of Myers Avenue, which was a tiny little shack actually, there were 7 of us in it. And I like to tell this story because it seems impossible, but it's really true. The three, mom and dad had their room, and my sister Betty would sleep on the couch in the living room, and the three youngest boys would sleep sideways in the bed, and then the oldest boy, Charles, would sleep on the floor. So we were absolutely dirt poor. And
that's how you grew up.
Yeah.
You didn't have indoor plumbing.
We had no indoor plumbing. Had a toilet. And
well, your dad was a preacher, wasn't he?
My dad was a railroad worker back in his younger days before he got sick. And actually, he was an activist in his own right going back in there. He was a railroad worker, but the coal miners were coming across Blair Mountain and so on into that area, and so he was helping union organize and so stuff like that. And he carried that with him his whole life. After he got over the tuberculosis and amazingly recovered, only had one lung, he could swim the New River down where that big bridge at Prince goes across there. He could swim the New River over and back with one lung. It was absolutely amazing. But anyway, he was a pretty tough disciplinarian in the home since he was a preacher. And so as a preacher kid, I get to be a little sneakier.
Now, he actually was preacher of Maxwell Hill Baptist.
He was preaching. He preached at Maxwell Hill Baptist for several years. And then he preached at, it's on the other side of Summersville, across the mountain there. Can't think of the name now. But anyway, he was up there for several years and treated beautifully by those folks, but age was getting to him, and he finally decided to retire. But then he did. He'd go to individual churches and speak and so on. And my mom was extremely supportive and helpful. She worked at Kyle Cleaners up here. You may remember that up on South Kanawha Street. And dirt poor, making almost nothing, and so on. But we caddied, as a lot of kids from East Beckley did, a lot of boys from East Beckley. And we basically supplemented her income. It was so pitiful that we would caddy, and it was, I forget exactly, it was $0.65 a round, 9 holes. Wow. And you know, the good guys would give you 75, and the really good guys every now and give you $1, and you thought that was just awesome. But anyway, we'd take our money straight home to mom, and she would had her a little pot, and then she would dole it out to us and so on. But anyway, we were a very tight-knit family. And just for the record, Charles was the oldest boy, and then Douglas, and then me, and then Ken. And then we had 2 sisters. They were the oldest. Mary and Betty. And of course, they're all passed away now too. So
now my brother Kenny and my brother were good close friends. And I think my brother dated Kenny's wife, Alma, before Kenny dated.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. And then I don't know exactly how that worked. But then
Alma was a wonderful gal.
I remember your brother Doug, and during his wilder days, he told us a story one time about getting drunk in Monroe County and waking up in Chicago and not knowing how he got there.
I know that story. Well, I don't know much of that story, but I know that it's true.
But Doug ended up later on making quite a contribution to people that were in rehab, and he was the director of a halfway house, I guess that's what you call it, and spent a lot of his last years doing great things. And I know he was always trying to raise money to keep the house open and things like that. But
I'm so proud of him for the work he did. That place is called Storm Haven.
Okay.
It's down in Raleigh.
I couldn't remember what the name of it was. Yeah. But now, growing up in East Beckley, of course, you went to Sylvia School. And back then, East Beckley down South Canal Street was like a small community. You had Richmond Dry Cleaners, Step Dry Cleaners, Hamp's Grill, Beaver Grocery, Barracks, Auto Park. You had, it was just about a community within itself.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it had been called Atkinsville at one time and then called Sylvia and then became part of East Beckley. But there was always something to get into. You had to hike and Piney and Creek and the cliffs, and nobody lost their life when you were there, were they?
No.
You ever swim in Piney?
Oh, yes, many, many times.
With clothes on?
No, buck naked, as I used to say.
But we used to go down there and hang around the dump and the cliffs and Cabbage Head Meadow.
I met that guy on two different occasions, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, he was an interesting person.
Absolutely big story, yeah.
And the dump, the city dump, was out the road. You had to go by the animal shelter, and that was an interesting place too, wasn't it?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the dump was a source of income for us boys who would go there and get scrap iron, and Mr. Mitchum was the fellow who was running, I think. And anyway, he would let us do that, and we would sell scrap iron. In the old days, when you go for ice cream in a store, you have a scoop and a cone and so on. Well, when the ice cream was getting old or really low in the tub at the store, then it was hauled over to the city dump. And Mr. Mitchum knew when they were coming. We would go and we'd actually get quarter tubs of ice cream to eat. But this was a bad one. Kenneth and I had been over there, and we were coming up below that little road, little alleyway up through under the dump, and they were dumping tires. People used to recap tires and stuff, but if you had a hole in them, they couldn't do it. So, but anyway, we would actually get the best tires and put boots in them and put them on family cars and stuff like that. But one day they were dumping those tires, and Ken and I both jumped behind a tree, and I put my head out, to check on it. Bam! Hit me right in the face, knocked me literally across that little road there. And Ken, my younger brother, had to help me walk back to the house, and they took me to the hospital over here at the old Raleigh General Hospital.
Wow.
Yeah, and so on.
Well, Mr. Mitchum ran the city dump for years, I guess. I know he had a son named Roger, and had a daughter named Shirley. There was another daughter. I can't remember her name, but he was always a nice guy. He'd let you come in there and do whatever.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a fire going. That's when they burnt everything. And didn't cover up a lot. But on Saturday nights, the dump was usually closed on Sundays, I think. And on Saturday nights, it sounded like a war over there because guys would take 22 rifles and shoot rats. They would spotlight them.
I never did any of that, but I know it happened for sure.
I never, I don't think my brother ever did, but I could hear from my house, I could hear the shots, even amazing, with a 22, you know, that would carry it. And nobody ever got killed, so I guess it was fine. But there was a guy in East Beckley that all the kids, if you went to Sylvia School Playground, you had to play ball with Charlie Lilly. And Charlie was the candy man. You remember him?
Oh, Lord. What a story, that man. a lot of people call him Charlie D.
Yeah.
As in Charles Denzel, I think it was his middle name. And had those two boys, Rodney and Roger, right? Mm-hmm. And even Dorothy, his wife, ended up nicknamed by all his kids who would go over there, hung out with the candy man, and we called her Dorothy D. But while we're on this Candyman business, my kids were, I was with Charlie a lot, basketball, golf, and so on. But my kids loved it because of all the candy, and he had a little ping pong table and stuff down there. But anyway, Keith and I were walking up on Main Street. He was a little boy, probably, I don't know, 6 or 7, I'm guessing. And we ran into John Henry Stinson. And you may remember John. But anyway, John and I are talking. I'm holding Keith's hand. And John looked down at Keith and said, "You know, your dad's a really good guy." He said, "Yeah, but not as good as Charlie D." So anyway, Charlie played a huge role in East Beckley, for sure.
A lot of, for two or three generations of kids. He was there a long time. And another guy that had quite an influence on some of the kids around was Pee Wee Bonds. You remember him that owned the Pee Wee's?
I never really knew him, but I knew him.
He had a filling station there, and it seemed like he hired a lot of the kids growing up. And actually, I think that's one of the reasons my brother quit school. He was working at Pee Wee's, and then Pee Wee got into the cigarette business where they sold cigarettes through machines in different places.
Oh, yeah,
and my brother got to driving a truck for him, and he thought he was rich, and he quit school when he was 16 years old. And of course, he came back later and got a GED and did quite well. Mm-hmm. But Pee Wee influenced a lot of people in the East Beckley area too. But growing up there too, you probably sometime or another worked for Ryan Lilly at the Texaco station. You were close to where he lived, where he worked and stuff.
I worked there for a couple of years while I was in high school.
Yeah, he was a nice guy too.
Oh yeah, you know? Yeah, and that was also a place to congregate. You know, you didn't just go there for gas. You would socialize. At Ryan's.
But Ryan liked to drink a little liquor every once in a while.
Yeah, he was good at it.
At Sylvia School, Cecil Miller was a principal. Do you have any favorite teachers that you remember?
Actually, I can't remember names very well, but I remember Mr. Sims. And then there was Miss, we call them all Miss, Miss Jackson. I think she was a fourth grade teacher, as I recall. Oh, and there was a Bailey, Miss Bailey.
Miss Bailey? Yeah. She taught fifth grade when I was there for a while.
But Cecil Miller was another really fine man. And so he was our basketball coach. You know, as well, we go around and had intramural basketball, and he just developed quite a following and became political later on, was actually the mayor of Beckley.
He was, back then, the mayor was a part-time job, And he was a principal and a mayor of Beckley. And about the time, I think he was mayor when the Beckley Exhibition Coal Mine opened up. And we would do some things in school that they sold different items at the exhibition coal mines, and kids at school would make things. You know, he would get us involved. He was a great guy. You played Little League baseball and Babe Ruth baseball. I remember seeing that you played for a team in Babe Ruth called Black Knight.
That's right.
And Danny Williams and Ray Pest.
Frog was on our
Frog
team.
Frog Young played. Yeah. Man, that's some athletes right there.
Oh, yeah.
And you went to school with those guys. And what year did you graduate?
57.
That was a pretty athletic. I mean, the football team only lost one game, I think. Yeah. Danny Williams was a quarterback. Frog was a running back. Ray was a tackle or something.
Yeah. And, some of those good guys were so good as the reason I didn't play ball at Woodrow Wilson High School. As a matter of fact, Coach Ross Earl, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Junior high guy. I did tryouts, you know, after the eighth grade, and did tryouts up there he'd already been working with those uptown kids for a couple of years before we got there. And anyway, Coach Earl came over after the tryouts and told me that he couldn't take me. He said, you're good. You're a really good basketball player, but I got two or three just like you already, you know. So that hurt my feelings.
that was kind of the same way when I was in, came along later. It was, you know, we were only there 1 year because Sylvia still went to the eighth grade. And, he already knew some of the kids that had been there with him. So I can understand that now as a coach, but there were a couple guys from Sylvia that Doug Brown and Don Lowe, they were in the same grade you were in.
Yes.
And a lot of the kids quit school though that were from the East Beckley area before they graduated. Wonder what the reason was, you know, have any idea?
Probably low income families. And doing jobs like you mentioned Tommy doing and that sort of thing. But,
Well, you mentioned caddying when you were younger. Black Knight would have on Mondays, they would let caddies play because Black Knight was closed. They would let the caddies play.
Yeah,
That was the only way you guys could even learn to play golf. Sure, it was the only course around.
Yeah.
And they actually had a caddy tournament at the end of the year, I guess.
Yes.
And who was the biggest tipper that you ever caddied for? Do you remember?
Gosh, I can't remember, but we'd get a buck out of, you know, one or two a day. You caddied from early in the morning till dusk, you know, basically. So, you know, we actually made what we thought was pretty darn good money.
Now you, in a high school yearbook, underneath your name, your name is said free and easy. Easy going. I'm sorry. Free and easy going, not free and easy. It's kind of funny because in my yearbook, underneath my picture, it's easy come, easy go.
Yeah, there you go.
So we have something in common.
Yes, we did, by golly.
Did you remember how that got there or did somebody give you that?
I have absolutely no idea. Of course, I skipped school a lot. Mr. Paragoy told me, I ran into him on the streets later on, that he thought I skipped more school than any kid who ever graduated on time.
So, yeah, that's great.
I was bad in those days, I really was. So that's probably part of it. But before we get away, I wanted to mention, you mentioned Black Knight Country Club and us caddying over there. There was a guy there named Carlos James. And his family lived down what we used to call Rattlesnake Holler, right out of East Beckley, near Ryan Lilly's Texaco Station. But anyway, Carlos and I formed a friendship that has lasted till right now. And we're still in touch with each other, and we both, I can't travel much anymore because of my vision and whatever. But anyway, we've been back and forth visiting with each other, and in touch with each other birthdays. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. And I'm just so proud of him because He came from abject poverty, and he's made a tremendous, tremendous success of his life financially. And
yeah, his I worked with his brother Clyde some. Clyde had was in a construction business, and Clyde was he was laid back, but he was very intelligent, and you know, he could form up about anything. And then they had a brother named Jesse too.
Oh, sure, there was a bunch of those kids in there. Yeah, Jesse James.
After you got out of high school, what happened? What did you do?
Well, I couldn't really find work amounting thing. I worked at the old city, we called City Park. There was an Esso station there. I worked there for a while, and it was just obviously going nowhere. So I joined the Air Force, and I was actually in the service for 8 years, but 4 years out of school. And coming back to West Virginia, to Appalachia, after that 4 years, there was no work, absolutely no work. So I ended up going into coal mines and worked underground, Eccles Number 5 mine. And I immediately started figuring my way to get out of there. I remember my very first, we had a bathhouse. Not all those mines had one. Had a bathhouse. You know, I'm in the shower, and I'm washing my hair, and I keep sudsing and sudsing and sudsing. And finally, I look up there, and here's this dude with a jar of shampoo put it on there. And then one night, I hadn't been there very long at that time either. And it was, I worked a hoot out shift, midnight shift, and our work was caught up, and we're over, and we used to call it something, a hole, where you congregate a little bit. And I said, man, I am so darn cold. And this guy says, I'll tell you what, said, go over there, this piece of equipment. He said, go over there on that buggy, he called it. And there's a resistance there right above the wheel, and it's warm. Why don't you go over there? And I did, and I dozed off, and bang, somebody, I off that daggum thing, running down the main, as hard as I could run. You could stand up in Eccles in Number 5 at any place. So anyway, I didn't hear anything else, and I turned around back, and this guy's waving me back, and he had taken a shovel and slammed it up against there, scared me.
So you were the victim of surprise.
Oh, yeah.
I assume you got married sometime around there.
We got married during my first year in the service.
Okay.
I can't remember all that stuff so far back.
Was it a West Virginia girl that you married?
No, she was from Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you got into the insurance business, you started out with Guy Amato, didn't you?
Well, yeah, together we had the Amato Stanley Insurance Agency, yeah.
What kind of guy was he?
He was mostly a really good guy, but he was not fun to work with.
Really?
He was after the buck, believe me. And I'd be out doing something, and one of my customers' prospect come in. He'd write him up. We had separate accounts. He'd write him up on his account, that sort of thing. But mostly, I really liked Guy. He was, I was anxious to get away from him, and that's when I started my own insurance business over on McCreary Street.
Somewhere along the line, you got, I guess you were interested in politics. You decided to run for office, and the first time you ran, I remember. Here at this house, this was your office then, I think, and we would come up and call people. That's back when they had landlines, and you give each person a phone book, and you just take off, you know, or give a list of people that registered voters, and we would just call people outright and talk. And you were running for the House of Delegates and had several labor endorsements, unions were big at that time, and to get a union endorsement was something else. And you came so close, but you didn't win. And then you ran a couple more times after that. I couldn't help then. I was going to school or something at night. And but I was interested. I was kind of interested in politics, not as a candidate, just kind of as a campaign manager. And I actually worked for Howie Wells when he was running against James Key back in the...
I sort of remember that.
Back in the early... Actually, I was on the payroll for them for a while, and I learned a lot about politics. And I actually thought that I knew Howie Wells was the best candidate, but he didn't win, you know, and he ran again. He didn't win, you know, and it was, politics is tough.
It's really tough.
It's, and it can be a dirty business.
Yeah.
And it's even worse now. I wouldn't advise anybody to get into politics, but I'm interested, but you ran three times. Are you still, do you still pay attention to politics? I mean, do you still keep up?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And, yeah, definitely.
What are you? Would you consider yourself a moderate or a liberal? the L word at the or a conservative? What are you? I hate labels.
Well, this is a fun one. Kenny Bryant on Facebook commented on something I had written, and he said, "David, you sound like a liberal." And I wrote him back, and I said, "Kenny, I passed liberalism on the way left 30 years ago." He says, "Does that make you a socialist?" I said, "Here he goes. Call it, name calling now." I said, "Whatever you think, but it's fine with me." So, yeah.
Well, when you were in the insurance business, you went to Beckley College, and but you went to Antioch College.
I did.
Antioch had a branch here.
Yes.
And you have the distinction. I've been the first graduate.
That's true.
From Antioch.
Yeah.
And Antioch was a non-traditional school. Can you explain a little bit about what it was?
Understatement. It was extremely liberal organization, period. But anyway, as you mentioned, this was a branch of that. But everybody in the class was really politically oriented. The staff, small staff that it was, They were all very liberal. Anyway, it had a big. I met some really wonderful people there. The director, a guy named Bob Snyder, super intellect all the way. And anyway, it was a great experience for me, and totally non-traditional.
Now, do they still have an Antioch College around? I mean, not here, but I mean,
yes.
Is there one in?
Yes, the whole town was liberal. Uh-huh. Built around the college, of course. Yeah, but I think there's actually a separate Antioch University now. Okay. And I don't know the details on that, but
yeah.
I've been there. It's a beautiful little community, and people tease me about going to Antioch, and you know, it's a waste of my time and money, but I thought it worked great for me. So
now, you had a successful insurance business. So Erie was one of your main companies that you worked with, and great company. You ran it out of this house right now. Tell me a little bit about this house. I mean, this house is amazing. It's right almost in downtown. It's been here for a long time. Who owned this? Who built this house?
Oh, gosh, I don't think I know who built it. I may have known it one time, but it's just at 100 years old.
Wow.
And I've had it for over 40 years. Yeah, I think that's right. As a person my age now and not able to get around all that much, and it's perfectly, you mentioned downtown, got everything right here for me, library especially. I'm a reader, and it's 3 minute walk over there.
I like the way it's laid out, and the structure is obviously very solid. Whoever built it did a great job.
Oh, so, yeah.
But then you decided to sell your... You was pretty young when you sold your insurance.
I was probably in my 30s.
Wow.
Maybe 40. Been too many years.
What'd you get into after that?
There's a place over in Summers County called the Appalachian South Folklife Center. I've always objected to the South because I wouldn't think of West Virginia becoming a state seceding from the Confederacy and so on and so forth. But anyway, it was an organization for Appalachian kids, poor kids from not just West Virginia, but all of Appalachia. And they come in and spend the summer there and, of course, clothed and housed and so on and so forth. And it got a real reputation as a left-wing place, left of left. And a fellow named Don West, who is a wonderful writer and so on, was the founder of the Folklife Center and played a major, major role in my life. Sure.
How many kids would be there at a time?
We'd have about 50.
And they would come and spend
the entire summer. Well, pretty much the entire summer, maybe
wow.
a week or two after school, a week or two before school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how was that financed? I mean, if you're doing it for poor kids from Appalachia.
Mostly churches.
Okay.
But most of them are, I guess, wealthier churches up in the Northeast. Although there was one church from around Chicago, they sent kids every summer. And it became really quite well known.
It's still going on.
Still going, yeah. Oh, that COVID business just about shut them down, though. I mean, no groups came, zero for how long? 4 or 5 years at least. Mm-hmm. And so the finances have been really, really tight. But this summer, they've started back again.
Yeah. I always ask this. I know when you were growing up, you didn't have much time to listen to music, and they didn't, rock and roll actually hadn't kicked in. What kind of music do you listen to now, if you listen to music?
Well, I do listen some. I don't even know what you call it, easy listening. Matter of fact, Linda Ronstadt's been in the news here last day or two, I guess her birthday. People of that age and era would probably have influenced my musical tastes.
Yeah.
I'm not like a lot of folks, a lot of friends. They walk around with earbuds in even now listening to music, you know. My ears are occupied anyhow.
Well, that's the same. My wife and I, I listen to classic country. And when I was growing up, I listened to Motown and stuff like that. That was after your generation. But now I don't like new country music too much. I like the old stuff. And there's one station around that I listen to most of the time when I get an opportunity. If you had anything on a bucket list, anything you haven't done that you would like to do before you leave this area, this place?
Well, gosh, that's a biggie. I've done a lot of traveling, and I love Canada. I love Nova Scotia. I've been there 3 times, and I'd like to go back there for a visit. I got in my van one time and drove. I've even thought about doing this again, but that's not going to happen. I got in my van and I drove almost 4,000 miles on this trip out west, all over. And mostly I slept in my van. I had it set up, everything I needed and so on. And I pull into a rest area and they say two hours limit. And I would get that 2 hours, or I would start at the opening, and then a couple hours later, I go to the outlet where I'd sleep. But I was by myself, and when I got back, people said, God, I bet you met a lot of interesting people. I said, I didn't meet anybody. I just me. Yeah.
Wow. Did you go out Route 66?
I actually left here, and I headed up because I had a friend in Milwaukee, still a good friend. I headed up that way. And then turn left, then just meander. I've been in 43 states. And
that's kind of like the old John Steinbeck book called Travels with Charlie.
He had a black poodle. I remember that book.
And it's a great, great book. And, well, you've done something that a lot of people dream about.
Yeah.
And I would be remiss if we didn't include, there's a group of people that you meet with on Wednesday nights. Tell us about that group, and it's been going on for a long time.
Actually, this is just a wonderful thing in my life. this group, we started, you will remember Jimmy's place up on South Kanawha Street. As a matter of fact, after we played basketball at Woodrow Wilson High School, we'd come back over there and drink some beer and so on and so forth. Anyway, we started there at Jimmy's place for, and we did that for 4 years, but the ownership had changed, and anyway, they put in a jukebox and the place smoked so smoky you couldn't yeah. breathe in it. So a couple of our group started down going to the Rio Grande, a new Mexican restaurant here in Beckley. And slowly we all went down there. And we've been meeting, well, we were 4 years at Jimmy's. We had been meeting on Wednesday nights at the Rio Grande for 36 years.
Wow.
And on Wednesday night, nobody calls. Nobody calls. And they're assuming that if you're able to go, you'll be there. You'll come at night, we'll have 4, 5, or 6 or whatever. We'll have 16 or 18 or so on. So it's really interesting. And it's really helpful for me living by myself, and my social life is a little bit limited, and that gets me out of the house, and you know.
Now, you want to name anybody, or do you want to name any of the people? Or?
Oh, Lord have mercy. Charlie Feldhake and his wife Robin, Beverly Reinhardt, and her husband Joel, who moved back here from California. Lord have mercy. My friend Detlef Offers, he was our youngest guy. He's now 57. He was like 21 or 22 when he started.
Wow.
Probably one of my dearest friends, old Chuck Simon. He's there every Wednesday night, and he's been my friend for 50 years. So that's really a nice thing. But
well, just those people that you've mentioned, I know a few of them, and Beverly and I graduated together and worked together for
a while. Gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I used to coach a little bit together.
She's one of my dearest friends.
She's really something else. But what's the legacy? I know you can't control this, but what kind of legacy would you like to leave for people to remember you by, or how would you like to be remembered?
I guess I've never thought of it. At all. That old John Lennon statement, life is what happens to us while we're busy making other plans. But anyway, I just want to be, I definitely want to be remembered as a good friend. And I appreciate friendship. I have worked seriously with my kids, who are both now age. I say it's difficult being a parent of aging children.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned your kid. Let's mention that.
Okay. Well, my son Keith, he's the youngest. He's 58, and he lives in Adelaide, Australia. And he met a woman in Orlando, and she wanted to go back to Australia, and so he did. And he's been back several times. She's been here a few times. My daughter, Colleen, lives here in town. She married his fella, Alan. Super dude. They're building him a home over at Piney View right now. And I'm on good regards with her, their mother, Janie. So I think it took me a long time. Actually, I probably consider myself to be a good daddy all along. But to really be focused on the family and stuff, I was late arrival.
Well, Dave, it's quite a testimony, and I appreciate you talking to us.
I'm happy you came.
And any time you want to talk some more, you give me a holler, and we'll get back together and do it.
That's awesome. Oh, wait a minute. Before we go, a couple of people. We didn't mention Billy Lane. Billy is a person I've just absolutely loved always and forever, and you probably worked with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then Larry Buchanan, Bucky was considerably younger than me. I met him when he first came back from Florida at Sylvia Grade School in the outdoor court. I was down there shooting baskets, and here comes this little guy carrying a basketball with him, and we got to know each other, and he became central to our group. And course, he was instrumental in the Greater East Bickley Open Golf Tournament. I played some of that, you know, in the very beginning.
Yeah, Billy, I think it was Billy and Charlie Lilly and Larry Buchanan that came up with the idea of having a Greater East Beckley Open to sit in a Jimmy's place one night.
I'm sure.
After we played ball. And Larry's the one that took it and started it. And, of course, he was killed in a plane crash of 4, 5, 6 years after he started the tournament. And it got the old caddies back together, the guys that grew up in East Beckley, then their sons and grandsons. And now Larry's son, Kip, is running the tournament. And it's this year they celebrated their 45th year,
which is
amazing. So Larry had, I'm not sure he realized it was going to last that long, but good. Hopefully it'll continue.
Keep on. Well, you know what we're talking about, Bucky. I'd moved back to Florida. I lived in Florida 3 times, I think. Janie was from there, and so wanted to go back. And so anyway, I moved back to Florida, and Bucky was upset with me that I was leaving. He called me from time to time, and he called me one day and said, "You do not belong down there. You belong here with us." And I said, "Well, to tell you the truth, I've been thinking about it." He said, "Well, do it." Damn it. So I did. His wife, now his widow, Carolyn, you know, she said that Bucky just adored. He thought I was the bomb. I love Bucky. Wonderful, wonderful man.
Yeah, he was the one, when they first started organizing the Gibo, he called me at the Y when I was working there. And he said, "Want you to get in?" And I said, "Bucky, I've never played golf in my life, you know." Oh, and he said, "I said, I don't even own any golf clubs. I said, I'll come out there and do something, but I'm not going to play. I don't own it. I don't own golf clubs. Never played." And I got home that evening, and there was a golf bag on my front porch with 7 golf clubs in it. And he called me up and said, "You don't have an excuse now."
They darn.
Wow. And so I used that same bag for years because I never really played a whole lot.
I still got mine.
And I think I finally gave the bag when I bought me a new bag. I gave the bag to J.C. Francisco, wanted it for something. And so that bag is still around. But he got me involved. And, of course, I'm still about the worst golfer that ever played. But
I doubt that.
Still enjoy it.
You're athletic. I'm sure you play pretty darn well. You mentioned J.C. Francisco. He was another wonderful man. For a while, he lived when we moved to West Virginia. He was on that little dirt street over there, Myers Avenue across the bypass.
Yeah,
he was a great friend. And his son, we're in touch, you know, on Facebook. And
J.C., I stayed in touch with J.C. For so many years, even up until the day before he passed away. I talked to him. And we were really tight. But, Dave, again, I thank you for talking with us. Anytime you want to talk some more, give me a holler, and I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you and Diane both. I was thinking how lucky you are to have this very handy woman help you around here. So,
well, she's stuck with me, I guess. Me too. Anybody else who'd like to be on our program, just hit me up at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. Until next time, God bless you. You know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be
can call me